Paper 15, section 3, which is old single column, page 167. All right, now, most likely, this is a one-section evening. Probably ought to be a one-section evening. We want to very, very methodically step through this section. As I mentioned before, many unfortunate tracks of thought have begun here. Amongst earnest readers who unfortunately weren't precise and careful in how they engage the words in this section. You need to think about it all very carefully. Notice all the details. The revelators have constructed it so that it's wholly adequate to constrain false tangents, but only if you supply the favorable conditions. By and large, that means both eyes open and attentive, you know, and noticing the details, not racing through it, carefully reflecting through it. So we'll do that. I won't belabor it. I even brought a few little astronomic images to help a little bit, okay? I mean, it'd be great if we had a, you know, a classroom and then we could project it and whatnot, but we'll make do. We aren't in a rush. Let's see if we can just slowly step through it. No, it's not. But in content, it's huge. This is, look at the title of the section, The Super Universe of Orbitan. This is the section that explains to you exactly what the super universe of Orvinton is. If you don't properly interpret, you know, recognize and interpret this section, you have a totally disrupted picture, totally disrupted cosmology in which you are attempting to see yourself. You're not going to understand. Okay, so you want to get this solid anchor point in your mind. Get it there, and then it's laid. That foundation is laid. You don't have to spend decades and decades ruminating anymore on, well, what's the super universe? What isn't? You know, recognize what they're giving you, and now that project is done. Now you can build upon that. You know, that's the key, and this is a great example of that issue. You want to firmly establish some things, finally. Get rid of the question marks. Question marks aren't sacred. Okay, don't exalt them into eternal things. The whole point is to find a question mark, pursue the answer to that question, answer it, and then build upon the next thing. You know, rather than saying, "Isn't it wonderful that there's this question?" Let us just ruminate on the mystical nature of the question forever, you know, and I'll teach my children the mysticism of this question. I mean, that's mankind needs to break that. The revelation is here to answer some questions definitively and then move on. So don't carry forward the historical tendency of man into your engagement with the fifth epical revelation. It's meant to answer questions. So let's get rolling here on this, and we'll definitely be taking it a paragraph at a time, by and large. Okay, and we'll slowly pull apart all the things that are in there, so that you understand why that part of the paragraph is there. Okay.
Section 3: The Super Universe of Orvinton. Practically all of the starry realms visible to the naked eye on Urantia belong to the seventh section of the grand universe, the super universe of Orvinton. The vast Milky Way starry system represents the central nucleus of Orvinton, being largely beyond the borders of your local universe. This great aggregation of suns, dark islands of space, double stars, globular clusters, star clouds, spiral, and other nebulae, together with myriads of individual planets, form a watch-like, elongated circular grouping of about 1/7 of the inhabited evolutionary universes.
Okay. All right. And for going forward, it's nebulae. The plural is nebulae. Okay. Nebula, nebulae. Okay.
Very nebulous.
All right. So let's just start out. So practically all the starry realms visible to the naked eye on Urantia belong to the seventh section of the grand universe, the superuniverse of Orbitan. You remember back in paper 12, we touched upon that fact, where they mentioned that with your naked eye, there are two or three galaxies that you can faintly see. In other words, two or three objects that you can see with the naked eye, astronomic objects, that are outside of the superuniverse level. Okay? That are in the first outer space level. You know, obviously, on the inner regions of the first outer space level, if they're going to be visible with your naked eye. Okay, yeah.
Okay, so there's the Milky Way. Then after this first outer space level is after the Milky Way? Is that what you're saying?
Right. We're going to get into all those details as we step through it. Just so one step at a time, but that to that point. If the round table here is the central universe, okay, and you imagine a donut, like we were talking about, a donut of space going all the way around that central universe, that circuit, that donut of space, that's the superuniverse level. The first outer, it's on the outside of that picture, going all the way around is the first outer space level. You know, everything wraps around the central universe. First, the superuniverse level wraps around.
There's seven of those.
There's one circuit. There's seven locations around the circuit, but there's one circuit, one superuniverse level. The levels are radially outward. So you have the central universe, then you have the first level out, a band all the way around. And then you have the next level out, another bigger band all the way around. That's the first outer space level. So if you're looking to the first outer space level, you turn your back on the central universe and look outward, away from it. And you're looking out the outer space levels. That's the inner, and that's the outer, okay? All right, so now, like they said, they told you with the naked eye, there are two or three. The ores, you know, if you have really, really dark skies, really, really good eyes, okay, you can maybe see a third. So let's just start with that. Okay, so the first thing is this object. That's the Andromeda Galaxy. Right? A lot of you, I suspect, have seen a picture of the Andromeda Galaxy. Right? Okay, it's a spiral galaxy. And now, obviously, this is not what you're going to see with the naked eye, what's in this picture. To the naked eye, there's a spot in the sky, this little fuzzy spot. Okay, that you can see with your naked eye. You know, you're not going to see any swirl or anything. It's just a little fuzzy spot. Okay, now why is it called the Andromeda Galaxy? Like we were talking about, I believe, last time. You know, you go out and look up at the sky, and there's this big dome of stars all around you. And in order to be able to talk about what's going on in the sky, you designate particular general directions in the sky by a name. A certain general direction in the sky, a region of that view, is called the Andromeda constellation. This little fuzzy spot that you see with the naked eye Now, this galaxy is within that angular region. Wherever it might be, from there to there and there to there. If anything that's, within that angular region, you're going to call the constellation Andromeda. And doesn't matter if the objects that you see in that region are really close or super, super, super far away, okay, it's all in the constellation Andromeda. So those constellations, like Andromeda, are not a region of space. They're a direction. From the vantage point of the Earth, you stand on the Earth, you look in a certain direction, that direction is called Andromeda. Okay? And that's the very first thing that's very important. Many people don't understand that it's a direction. They think it's a place. It's like, you go some certain distance and there's this little region of space that's called Andromeda. No. It's everything that's in that direction. If you think of it as a region, you're going to misinterpret everything in this section. You have to know it's a direction. Okay? So that's the brightest thing. The Andromeda Galaxy is just immediately out in the first outer space level, just a little bit outside the inner boundary. Okay? And it's pretty straightforward to see with the naked eye. Okay? So that's one definite. The second definite is this little galaxy. It's called the Triangulum Galaxy. Again, it's just a little spiral galaxy. Not so little. It's a spiral galaxy. All right? And it's even fainter. Okay, but you can see it fairly easily, especially if you're not in the city or anything. You're out in the country. Pretty easy to see another little fuzzy spot in the sky. That's the Triangulum Galaxy. Why is it called the Triangulum Galaxy? Because in a different direction, all the objects in that direction are in the constellation Triangulum. Okay?
Are one of those two one of the first things that Hubble discovered wasn't a star, but it was really a galaxy?
No. You mean Edwin Hubble, not the Hubble telescope. Yes. These two and a third object are the first three things that Edwin Hubble, back from the middle to late 20s, he discovered that they were definitely extragalactic. Okay.
Until that point, we thought the Milky Way galaxy
was everything. And that little fuzzy spot was some little nebula within the Milky Way galaxy. But he looked at it, with better telescopes, and no, it's not just a blob of gas. There's actual stars. I can see them, And then he used a distance-determining method to figure out how far away those stars in that little fuzzy patch are, and it's like, whoa, they're really far away. Okay. The two definites are these two, the Andromeda Galaxy and the Triangulum Galaxy. They're not that far apart in the sky. They're kind of in a similar direction in the sky, but they're in different constellations. Okay, so it's enough of a different direction that you've moved to a different general region, different constellation. Okay. But they're both about the same distance away, just immediately out in the first outer space level. Okay. And then Oort 3. The Oort 3, like I mentioned back when we were doing paper 12, is this galaxy that's called Centaurus A. Not a very romantic name, but Centaurus A. That band through it is a big lane of dust, that's blocking a lot of your view of the stars, big lane of dust that's in the galaxy there. So it's a black swath, see, across the middle of it, just blocking the view. Okay. Like I said, if you have good eyes, dark, very dark sky, you can just make out another tiny little fuzzy patch. Centaurus A. Why is it called Centaurus? Because it's in a different direction in the sky in the constellation Centaurus. Okay. So these three objects in three generally different directions in the sky, you see these three little fuzzy patches. Okay, those are the, and Centaurus is quite big. Centaurus A is quite big. And so you can still just see it, even though it's much further out into the, not way out in the first outer space level, because then no way you're going to see it. But it's distinctly further out than Andromeda and Triangulum. Yeah. But it's definitely in the first outer space level. And maybe just mention that in general. If you see a photographic image of a galaxy that looks, you know, anything like any of these, where, you know, it's they can get a real good close-up, you can see a lot of detail. I mean, that's a galaxy that's in the first outer space level. I mean, if it's in the second outer space level, that's a very far out. It's pretty tough to get a really close-up, detailed image of a galaxy that's way out in the second outer space level. Okay, so even without looking what their estimate of how far away it is, you know, just by looking at the picture, you can say, it must be in the first outer space level. I can see all kinds of detail, okay? It doesn't just look like a tiny little spiral galaxy, you know, in the midst of a bunch of them in a, you know, picture or something. Okay?
So did Hubble discover these three as separate from the Milky Way?
Not these three.
Just
these, the Triangulum and Andromeda, and then a third one that I guess we'll probably get to next week.
Okay.
It appears that these first two that we're looking at, we have a little different angle.
Right, you're not looking at them face on or edge on. You know, they're at a little bit of a tilt.
Now,
okay.
If you look at more galaxies, is there any commonality of orientation?
No, when you look out in the first and second outer space levels, they're at
every
angle.
Okay.
So Andromeda, on a size perspective, compared to Aurobantan or Milky Way, would be,
you know, all of the kind of really, you know, big, complex spiral galaxies that you see out there are roughly Milky Way sized. Yeah, yeah.
If I'm looking in this direction, I know that all the constellations and all the stars are in motion. So tomorrow night, when I look in that direction, it's going to be a whole different sky, right?
Right. I mean, we're moving, the Earth is moving around the sun, and the Earth is rotating. I mean, if you go out and sit there for 2 hours, you know, things move across the sky. But what doesn't change, you know, to any noticeable degree with a naked eye is like the shape of the Big Dipper. You know, you go out when you're 3 and you go out when you're 80 and look at the Big Dipper, and it seems to be shaped just like it was when you were 3, okay? The stars haven't, you know, moved all over the place. Stars are all moving, but the distances are vast. So even though they might be moving pretty fast, over the course of your life, you're not going to see any change in the shape of some pattern of stars, you know, in that direction. Even though the stars that make up a certain pattern in the sky, like the Dipper pattern, you know, may be at very different distances from you. You know, over the course of a life, none of them are moving fast enough where, you know, the Dipper is going to, you know, unravel before your eyes. Okay? Over the course of thousands of years, yeah, you can start to notice little changes in the shapes of patterns of stars in the sky. All right, so practically all, you know, everything except those three, okay? Now if there are a couple of galaxies that, since you've found them with a telescope, and, you know, if you know exactly where to look, and it's hyper dark and all this, you know, maybe, it's like, you know, maybe I do see, okay. But in terms of actually finding something with the naked eye, it's just 2 or 3. Okay, and that's it. Okay, you know, if you don't know where to look, you know. Okay, those are the only potentially three you're going to find with the naked eye. Everything else is either in the super universe of Aurobantan, or it's not visible to the naked eye. Okay? Okay? Practically all.
All those constellations are in the Milky Way.
No.
They're not?
No. I'm sitting in the Milky Way and I'm looking out into the first outer space level. I'm looking outside of my galaxy to that galaxy, for instance. Way, way, way outside of the Milky Way. Okay, not in the Milky Way at all.
Do the other galaxies have suns, or is that the only sun?
That's millions of suns.
Oh.
Okay, that spiral is lots and lots and lots, okay, of suns. I mean, the Milky Way has 10 trillion suns. Okay?
Paper 41, right?
10 trillion. Okay? It's like, well, geez, wouldn't I have to go a long ways to get outside of a blob of stars where there's 10 trillion of them? Yeah, you've got to go a long ways. These objects are way far away. Okay? So that when they look, you know, if you were at one of those galaxies, no one's there, they're uninhabited, you know, the outer space level is uninhabited. But if you... You know, imagine putting yourself on a planet around some star in Andromeda or Triangulum or Centaurus A, and you look back at the Milky Way, you know, the Milky Way would look like that. You know, it would look like a little spiral, you know, through your telescope. Okay, and it'd be a smudge to your eye. Okay, a little tiny smudge. Okay, so that's the first thing. And I want, you know, not only do I want to just, you know, make those three objects I referred to a little more concrete in your mind. But, you know, that bit about the constellation is a direction. Don't ever forget that a constellation is a direction. Okay, now, so the vast Milky Way starry system represents the central nucleus of Orvintan being largely beyond the borders of your local universe. Okay, so you have this donut of space that goes all the way around the central universe, like if this circular table is the central universe, like I was saying before, and 1/7 of that donut, a segment of that donut of space, like we talked about before, is the seventh super universe. Yeah, and then there's six other segments of the donut. Okay, so you have this, stretch of space. You know, if you just imagine, you know, the space that my hand sweeps through as it goes from my left hand forward here, okay? All of that space that my hand just passed through is the super universe of Orvintan. And in the middle of that space is a galaxy, a big galaxy called the Milky Way Galaxy. And you're down in that disk, okay? And then there's some other sparse stuff around it in that segment. But right in the center, the only big object is the Milky Way Galaxy. That's it. Okay? And since we're down inside of it, when we go out in the night sky, we're inside of a disk of stars. Okay? And so when we look in a certain direction in the sky, we see this swath across the sky. You know, when we're looking through the disk, if you look up from the disk or down from the disk, okay, you don't see that band, you know. And so, initially, all the ancients knew about was there was this band that it didn't look like stars, it just looked, you know, like a big fuzzy swath. It looked like milk, you know, a Milky Way, you know, across the sky. Okay, milky band across the sky. In the early part of the 20th century, we finally recognized what that milky band was about. We're down inside of a big disc-shaped galaxy, and that's what it looks like if you look, you know, along the disc. You'll see that band. Okay, so the central nucleus of that segment of space is the Milky Way Galaxy, and the local universe is a very small region inside of that great big spiral galaxy. Okay, most of Orvinton is beyond the borders of the local universe. Okay? It's just a local universe is just a tiny little region inside that disk. Okay, this great aggregation of suns, dark islands of space, double stars, globular clusters, star clouds, spiral and other nebulae, together with myriads of individual planets, forms... Well, let's just stop there. Okay? Just to make things a little more concrete, some of those words, you know, for those who aren't, you know, have never been interested in astronomy, a globular cluster is a big spherical collection of stars. Okay, that's what a globular cluster looks like. Okay, just, you know, imagine that's a great big sphere, big ball of stars, you know, with the density grading off, you know, to nothing as you move away from the center. Okay, that's a globular cluster. Okay, and if this table is the disk of the Milky Way, let's imagine that this circular table is the disk of the Milky Way galaxy. All around this disk, there are globular clusters like this. You know, like imagine one right here. There's a ball of stars right here that's above the disk. Okay, and there's a whole bunch of them. Okay, that when they're talking about those globular clusters, that's what they're talking about. There's a halo sort of these big spherical collections of stars that are being drawn into the disk by gravity. Okay. They assembled out here in the outside of the disk, but within, you know, that segment of space, it's Orvinton, they collected together over a long span of time into this spherical, you know, just purely gravitationally, you know, collected sphere of stars, and now it's being drawn in. You'll use all those stars to make local universes out of.
Does the whole creation around the Milky Way center, isn't it actually depicted as like the whole thing is a spiral?
Well, you have that spiral galaxy, but then there's a whole bunch, there's other stuff outside of that spiral, above it, below it, in front of it, behind it. Okay? I mean, it's just recognize that that segment of space has the Milky Way in it, you know, and that's the easiest thing to just to depict, that central nucleus. But the region around the Milky Way isn't void of matter. There is other matter.
Is the Virgo cluster close enough to be a part of it?
No, the Virgo cluster is way, way out in the first outer space level.
So do you know what it looks like then? Like all the outer stuff you're talking about, the clusters and...
Like I said, there's a whole bunch of these, you know, these globular clusters, and a few other, we'll get to some other things in a second, okay? Just wanted to, so that when they say globular cluster, that means something to you. If you've never seen a globular cluster, okay, it's just that nice spherical collection of stars. You know, and let's say there's a few million stars in one of these, you know, so it'll go a long ways to making a local universe. You're going to need more than one of them, most likely, okay? But it's, you know, it'll get you a long ways to building up enough stars to make a local universe out of. Okay, so obviously these are also very small compared to the disk of the Milky Way. Milky Way is huge compared to this object, okay? Right? Milky Way is 10 trillion stars, and it's a few million, okay? All right. Star clouds. What do they mean by star clouds? Clumps of stars. Maybe I'll go ahead and just kind of pass this around so you can see it up close. But you know, if you look at this, at the Triangulum Galaxy here, look at this in the spiral arms, and you can see it up close, and notice that they're not smooth, they're clumpy. Okay, when you look at a galaxy, you know, a lot of times, especially in the spiral arms, the stars aren't smooth in those arms. They're clumped, okay? You call those groupings of stars, those clumps of stars, a star cloud, quote unquote, because it's like you've got a basic background of gas and dust, that's like the sky, the background of the sky, and there's these clumps that you see in the sky, like clouds, okay? Just a simple analogy term, okay? Now I'll just, you know, let it drift around. But those, so those are, you know, when they say star clouds, they just mean that you've got some sort of a basic grouping of stars that if you pulled back far enough, you know, you'd notice that, you know, it's not like it's a harsh boundary or something, a stark boundary. It's just, you know, it's like a cloud, okay? It's just, so there's more stuff here than there is over there. So it's a clump, okay? So they'll use that expression, star clouds. Okay, spiral and other nebulae. Okay, besides the great big spiral galaxy, the Milky Way galaxy, there are a few other little galaxies, okay, that are, you know, also were formed outside of the Milky Way galaxy and are slowly being drawn in, again, to make local universes out of, parts of local universes. Here's an object, one of these objects we're talking about. This is a little galaxy that's being drawn into the Milky Way. This is called the Large Magellanic Cloud. Because again, in the night sky, if you went to the southern night sky, you'd see this little cloud of, you know, in the sky. You know, very easy to see with the naked eye. Okay, because it's not very far away. It's, you know, pretty, it's being drawn into the Milky Way galaxy. It's pretty close. Okay, that so-called Large Magellanic Cloud, and there's another little one nearby called the Small Magellanic Cloud. Those are two little tiny spiral galaxies relative to the size of the Milky Way. Yeah, they're still big, but relative to the Milky Way, they're tiny. They started out as two tiny little spiral galaxies just outside of the Milky Way galaxy, just like the Andromeda Nebula. You know, when they're talking about this formation of our solar system, and they start all the way back almost a trillion years ago, and they say, your star was part of a little spiral galaxy that got incorporated into the Milky Way. That little whirl got started outside of the Milky Way, okay, and was drawn in and used to construct Nebadon as part of Nebadon. Okay. Just like what happened to Andromeda, it happened to both the Large and Small Magellanic Clouds. If you look at it, it doesn't look like a little spiral. It looks like kind of just a clump. That's because as it's being drawn in, it's being, you know, torn apart some by tidal forces. You know, it's being disrupted some. You can still see it has kind of a bar sort of a shape. It's not totally sort of just a glob. You know, because you tend to have a spiral galaxy where you have a bar with spirals that come off of it. Okay. So it's being drawn in. Okay. And
what's the bar, Chris? What's in the bar?
Well, it may be stars, it may be gas. I don't want to get too far into, you know, all these astronomy things, but maybe we can talk about it a little bit offline.
That is so mysterious to me, those bar formations.
The bar is sort of immediately mysterious, but so are the spirals. Yeah. The spirals are actually mysterious too. Until you understand how galaxies work, and then they're not so mysterious. You know, the revelation has finally given us what we need to start thinking about some of those mysteries. Okay, so just wanted to show you those two as examples of things they're rattling off there. Now, here is a picture. Boy, and I don't have any idea how well you guys can see this. Let's see, maybe I should describe it first. Well, if you go down to one of the big observatories in Chile on a mountaintop, okay, so you're down in the southern hemisphere, now, and you take a fisheye lens and take a nice panoramic photo, when you can see off just above the horizon that band that is the Milky Way. So you take this picture and you'll see this band. So let me just show you that. So, you know, you're standing, the ground is actually at the bottom of the picture. I don't know if you, how well you can see that. Okay, but you can see the band. So you've taken a picture of the whole swath of the Milky Way that's across the sky there. Okay. Okay? And one of the things to notice in that is over here on the right, put my fingers by them, see those two fuzzy blobs there by in front of my fingertips? Okay. Yeah, your left. Right in front of my two fingertips there. There's two little fuzzy spots. Can you see those clear back there even? Those two little white fuzzy spots? Those are the large and small Magellanic clouds. Okay. You know, the bigger one is here, is blown up in this, you know, picture I just showed you. Okay. Just to give you an idea, okay, you know, even though you can only see part of the you know, the swath of the Milky Way, look how small those two little dots are compared to the size of the Milky Way there, you know, just a part of the Milky Way you can see. Okay, it gives you an idea when I'm saying a globular cluster or the Andromeda Nebula, you know, the large and small Magellanic clouds, they're small compared to the Milky Way. And the Milky Way is this vast disk, and they're just this little clump in comparison. Yeah.
Compare Andromeda to one of those?
Yeah, Andromeda is going to be a galaxy that's, you know, on the order of those large and small Magellanic clouds, maybe a little smaller. Okay, remember like the small one.
But it's been absorbed into the Milky Way.
Right, it's now absorbed into the Milky Way. Yeah. Right. Okay, and these two eventually will be too. Someone's future local universe is going to be in part built out of those things once they're incorporated into the disk of the Milky Way, as well as all those globular clusters. Yeah, yeah.
Any idea when the Master Force organizers stopped generating new worlds in space? Super universe level.
You know, it tells you that there's not a lot going on. We're apparently pretty far along the way of building all the components that they're going to need to make all the local universes. But you don't know for sure. Yeah. Okay, and then that last little part. So you basically have this great big Milky Way galaxy, this big spiral galaxy, and a bunch of little things that are slowly going to be incorporated into it, things like globular clusters and little tiny galaxies. Okay, and all of that collection of matter forms a watch-like elongated circular grouping of about 1/7 of the inhabited evolutionary universes. Okay, so again, the super universe level, again, let's make the table the central universe. The super universe level wraps around it, you know, a 1/7 segment. Okay, the only inhabited part of the entire master universe is what's in the super universe level and, of course, the central universe. Okay, nothing inhabited outside. And that little segment of space that has the Milky Way in the center. So, you know, basically that central region is circular. The Milky Way is basically circular. And, of course, everything that's really close to it, you know, is going to have kind of a circular shape too. But, you know, there's especially more room when you go forward and behind the Milky Way, you know, in terms of around the circuit. Okay, there's some room there on each side. Hence the elongated circular. So you have a circular, you know, galaxy at the center and a circular, basically, distribution of things that are immediately around it. But then you can move away front and back, not so much side to side, not that much room side to side, okay? But front to back, you know, there's some more space. And so when you think about all the matter in the holes of Orvinton, that whole distribution of matter is going to be elongated if you count all the little things that can be spread of ways front and back.
Yeah. All of these clusters that are in the process of moving into the Milky Way or Orvinton, when do the model suns arrive to claim them as?
Well, once the power beings have the rudiments of a local universe assembled down in the disk of the Milky Way, they have a handful of of these sort of rough draft local universes, rough in the sense of they're not so specific in their structure that it won't work for any Michelson and his plans. So they rough them out, you know, they get the amount of matter that you need in a local universe all together, and they're keeping it together. And they've got a handful of these that they've assembled. And you get a Michael that's ready to go out. And he says, okay, so what potential local universes do you have for me? And say, well, we got six of them, you know, and here's the first one. You know, Jeanette knows how to do this. Okay, you show them the houses. Okay, and I mean, and so they lay out, here's the, you know, the six rough ones we have. High ceiling, low floors, and a playroom for the children, and right, and you know, and then Michael's son picks one of them, and then you know he goes out with the creative spirit, and they take it from its roughed out state, you know, and begin to get specific.
But it needs to be pretty much in the Milky Way, I think.
Right, it's in, right, because none of these objects, by and large, that are being incorporated in, are big enough in and of themselves to make a whole local universe. Okay. All right. Right. They're the components. You need a certain amount of matter, basically. Okay. One more question.
So is that everything is in the Milky Way? Everything? I mean, is that all we have is the Milky Way?
What do you mean everything?
I mean, like, in the outer space levels where the central universe, all that stuff, is it just the Milky Way? Is there no other galaxy? I mean, it's a galaxy, right?
Right. Just, you got a dip, you have, just, okay, again, the Milky Way is not the central universe. The table is not my hands. Okay, my hands are the Milky Way galaxy. The Milky Way galaxy is entirely inside my hands, cupped in a circular shape here. Okay, that's the Milky Way galaxy inside my hands. Obviously, the table is not inside my hands. John is not inside my hands. You're not inside my hands. Chris is not inside. Okay, you guys are out in the first outer space level. Okay, you're farther from the table than my hands are.
Chris is in the second.
Now they're in the second, I think, out there. Okay, the peanut gallery up there is in the second outer space level. Okay, all right. Nick and Maria are maybe out in the second. Okay, okay. Okay. That the Milky Way is just in this little region. Okay. So, every galaxy picture that you've ever seen taken from a telescope is all this stuff out here is way, way outside of what's inside my hands here. Okay.
Because I mentioned that to my girlfriends once, and she said that was all there was.
Back at the beginning of the 20th century,
yeah, until 1927.
Right, they thought that that's all there was. Okay, now we know much better.
So it's been a few updates. Okay.
Yeah, a few updates in the last 100 years. So just one other thing, okay, watch-like. Again, you know, just a simple little attempt. What does a pocket watch look like? Is it a ball? No, it's a flat disc, right? Okay. All right, the Milky Way galaxy is like a big pocket watch, okay? It's a lot bigger in diameter than it is in thickness. Okay? You know, plus the fact that the hands on the watch go around, so does the Milky Way go around, okay? In a circle. All right, let's read another one here.
From the astronomical position of Urantia, as you look through the cross-section of nearby systems to the Great Milky Way, you observe that the spheres of Orvinton are traveling in a vast, elongated plane, the breadth being far greater than the thickness, and the length far greater than the breadth.
Okay, so again, this is all predicated on the fact that the nucleus of this segment of space, that is Orvinton, is this flat disk, okay, in the Milky Way galaxy, watch-like, okay? The little objects that we've been talking about that are outside of the disk but nearby, okay, also, you know, tend to be, in general, not that far away from the plane okay, that the Milky Way disk is in. For instance, okay, you know, when you're looking at this picture, you know, there's the plane that, you know, the Milky Way. Are the large and small Magellanic clouds a long ways above that band? No, they're just a little way. They're not very far above it. Okay? They're pretty close to being in the plane. Okay? So, by and large, if you step back and look at that whole segment of space, all the little things that are outside of the Milky Way, they're definitely tend to be more in the plane than just everywhere in that volume of space. Okay? Yeah?
Now, is this due to the dark gravity bodies keeping everything in that plane?
Obviously, there's a whole bunch of grand design things, right, that are just like, you know, not to mention, you know, when we talked about Nether Paradise, you know, the whole outer space levels, too, tend to be more in a plane than just everywhere uniformly, okay? There's a general tendency. Havona is in a plane, you know. Everything is being guided more towards the plane, but not literally in a plane outside of Havona, okay? But more in the plane than not, okay? All right, so that's what they're saying. So in other words, so again, you know, you got this swath of space, and in terms of the distribution of the matter in it, it tends to be pancaked, it tends to be thin relative to the breadth here. See, the breadth being far greater than the thickness. Okay, so the radial breadth is big compared to the thickness. Okay, or if you're just thinking about the Milky Way galaxy, the diameter of the Milky Way galaxy is big compared to the thickness of the Milky Way galaxy. It's a disk. Okay, and then the length, you know, the rest of that, the length far greater than the breadth. So, you know, it's not a square shaped, it's a rectangular shaped, you know, swath of space here. Okay, so it's longer this way, you know. In this way, the length is greater than the breadth. Okay. All right, let's read some more.
Observation of the so-called Milky Way discloses the comparative increase in Orvieton's stellar density when the heavens are viewed in one direction. While on either side, the density diminishes. The number of stars and other spheres decreases away from the chief plane of our material superuniverse. When the angle of observation is propitious, gazing through the main body of this realm of maximum density, you are looking toward the residential universe and the center of all things.
Okay. Well, now that first part, you know, is pretty obvious just from this picture that there's this dense band called the Milky Way, and it's sparse above and below it. Okay, and that's what they're talking about. Yeah, the Milky Way is just a band, and you can look above the disk or below the disk. Things diminish, the stars diminish in density as you look down or look up from that band. In other words, looking through the disk. Okay, and can you see how, basically above my finger there, you know, there's kind of a brighter, thicker patch to the band of the Milky Way, okay? That, the particular direction in the sky, if you look towards that kind of fatter region, that's in the direction of Sagittarius. The constellation Sagittarius is in that direction. And you are looking towards the center of the Milky Way galaxy. Okay, when you're looking in that direction. Okay? And what they're saying is, see, if you look towards the center of the Milky Way, you know, imagine like if here's me and I'm looking towards the center, if I imagine what my gaze would look at if I kept going beyond the center, off, you know, past the Milky Way disk, what's directly behind the central universe? Okay, that's what they're saying there, right? The residential universe in the center of all things, okay? We're on the, you know, when you're thinking about the disk of the Milky Way here, we're on the outside, pretty much kind of straight on the outside, so that if we look towards the center of the disk and keep looking, you're looking towards the center of everything, Yeah, as opposed to being like this, you know, where you'd look off that way, okay? If you look towards the center, you're looking also towards the central universe because we're on the, basically the outside.
At night, can't we only just see one direction out?
I can go outside in a nice guy and I can look in all kinds of directions. You know, and if it happens to be... Well, if Sagittarius happens to be up, like, you know, go in the middle of the summer, down in the southern sky, you'll see the Milky Way, you'll see the little teapot, you know, an arrangement of stars that's part of the constellation Sagittarius. You know, you're looking towards the center of the Milky Way galaxy, and you're looking to the south sky there. You're looking towards the center.
As the Earth goes around the sun.
Right. You know, so, you know, that's, you know, this picture is taken in the southern hemisphere at a time when, you know, you can see the center of the Milky Way there in that particular direction. Okay, and this is in the southern hemisphere, which is very helpful to visualizing this because, you know, when you flip everything from our northern hemisphere bias upside down, like it is, you know, in the southern hemisphere, you're actually in the orientation that we always think about the super universe, the central universe, you know, the master universe. When you're looking like this, see, like if I look towards the center and I'm looking like that, well, then if I look over here, I'm looking towards the first super universe. If, you know, if the central universe is here, and a little bit is this way, is towards the first super universe number one. And it is. I mean, if you look sort of, you know, over in this direction right here, just a little ways to the right of the central, you know, region there, you're looking towards the first super universe. And did you notice as I was showing this in the band of the Milky Way, can you see the big black blob that runs, basically blocks most of the stars of the Milky Way there? You know, in the plane of the disk, there's lots of gas and dust. You can't see very far. It, you know, you can hardly see, you know, anything. It's almost all black because there's so much dust blocking your field of view. Okay. Obviously, there's no way I can see the first super universe galaxy. I'd have to be able to see through that black cloud there of gas that's opaque. You know, not to mention all the stars along that line of sight. I mean, there's all this stuff. You can't see the first super universe right there, but it is right there. I'm back behind the Milky Way in the distance. There would be another disk you'd be seeing edge on, okay? But you can't see it because it's in the same plane as the Milky Way, and there's all that gas. You know, if we were rotated, you know, if we weren't on this outside, if we rotate around, you know, so that we were here, okay, now there's nothing blocking our view. We could just look right over there and see the first super universe galaxy. Or if we happen to be over on this side, we could look over here and see the sixth. Okay? But we're on the outside, so we can't see either of them because they're blocked by our view through the galaxy. All right?
If you're looking, if we happen to be on the edge there, if we were looking to the first or the sixth, how big would those galaxies be?
There's seven galaxies that are basically the same size as the Milky Way. Yeah, or six more. Yeah.
Would it look like Andromeda, or would it be smaller or larger?
Well, again, Andromeda is roughly the size of the Milky Way.
I know, you know, but it's so further away.
It's about the same distance, yeah.
Okay, so it would look like Andromeda.
Yeah, it'd be a little smudge. Right, yeah. It wouldn't be this gigantic, yeah, no.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you were all the way on the other side, looking towards the central universe, then you couldn't see anything because of dark
gravity. Gravity bodies block your view. Yep, okay. Yep. So you know, to your point, I mean, you know, you really can't see much of anything no matter where you are. Okay, but just a little reminder: we're fairly small and subjective still at this point. All right. So, okay. So let's go into the next paragraph there.
Of the 10 major divisions of Orvieton, 8 have been roughly identified by Urantian astronomers. The other 2 are difficult of separation recognition because you are obliged to view these phenomena from the inside. If you could look upon the super universe of Orvinton from a position far distant in space, you would immediately recognize the 10 major sectors of the seventh galaxy.
Okay, so the first thing before we're going to, just notice the last phrase there, okay? This question, okay, a major sector, you know, what does that include? Does that include a whole bunch of galaxies? No, that you have 10 major sectors of one galaxy, the seventh galaxy. Okay, there's nothing at all confusing about this, okay? The superuniverse of Orvinton is basically the Milky Way galaxy. It's a basically circular disk. It's divided.
A bunch of artists have this pictured out pretty well in those.
Right. But many have gone astray on this, okay? It's basically this circular disk. It's broken into 10 pi wedges, okay? The seventh galaxy, not the seventh cluster of galaxies. The seventh galaxy. One galaxy has 10 major sectors, okay? The circular disk of the Milky Way galaxy is divided into 10 pi wedges.
A wheel with 10 spokes.
Wheel with 10 spokes, okay? A pi with 10 pieces. Okay, if I'm on the outside of that disk, okay, they're telling you that the two pi wedges that are on, you know, opposite side of the center from me, obviously are not going to be visible to me. I can't, you know, because the whole central region is in the way, okay? It's thin enough away from the center that I can kind of get some sense of the rest of the galaxy. But if you look at anyone who's trying to figure out what the distribution of stars is, basically, or the spiral arms and stuff in the Milky Way, and you know, it's fraught with problems. But what you'll always see is there's this big wedge where they don't have anything in their picture because you can't see there. Okay, that wedge that they're telling you where you can't see basically has two major sectors in it. Two pieces of the pie are in that zone I can't see. That are on the opposite side of the galaxy. Okay? Yep.
It says here that a Urantian astronomer has...
Wait, we...
Roughly identified eight of them.
Now again, we're not talking about anyone who... any astronomer who thinks that there are 10 major sectors of the Milky Way galaxy. No, they're just saying... You know, especially if you view in longer wavelengths, like if you look in the infrared, you know, or even longer wavelengths, you can penetrate some of that dust in the visible here.
Yeah, and it's not referring to a single astronomer.
No.
It's plural.
Right. Right. It's just us, our astronomers, right. Humans, you know, we know we're in a disc-shaped galaxy. We figured that out, okay? And we can see most of the disc, you know, roughly. Not very well, but we roughly can tell that it's, what we're the part we can immediately see here, you know, does curve around. We can tell that much. And then there's a part we can't see on the other side, but, you know, we can basically tell that it isn't sort of a, you know, something that goes on forever. It's a disc that has kind of an edge to it, and it kind of curves around. Okay, right. That's all they're saying. So we've seen that. Okay. You shouldn't be able to go past this last sentence with some notion that Orvinton is many, many great big galaxies. Okay? It doesn't say the seventh cluster of galaxies. It says the seventh galaxy. In other words, the seven super universes are seven galaxies, basically. That's it. Just like the old picture, the old painting. All right.
Really? There's a lot of confusion about that?
There's endless confusion about that. Okay? All right.
The rotational center of your minor sector is situated far away in the enormous and dense star cloud of Sagittarius, around which your local universe and its associated creations all move, and from opposite sides of the vast Sagittarius subgalactic system, you may observe two great streams of star clouds emerging in stupendous stellar coils.
Okay, the reason there's confusion starts right here in this next paragraph. Okay, where they go, well, I thought I understood, but now, no, it's saying something totally different, and then off they go on a tangent, okay? All right, so first of all, remember how much time we spent on that idea of a swing, okay, of a path, okay, where, you know, it's a curved path that something can be on, but the center of that curvature doesn't necessarily have to be within the region that you're considering moving. You know, it could be, you could have a region you're considering moving and it's like this. The center is within my hands. Or I could have a glob here that's within my hands and it's going around the center of the table there. Okay? The center of the curved path is not within my hands. It's way off, far away from what I'm watching moving in a curved path. Okay? The rotational center of your minor sector. Okay, a minor sector is a collection of 100 local universes. It's kind of a great big cloud, star cloud. It's a big collection of stars. Imagine that that minor sector is in my hand here. You have my two hands. Okay, my hands are inside of one of the big pie wedges. Okay, again, make this table the Milky Way. Okay. Extending out to where I'm sitting here. Okay? So the center of the Milky Way is in the center of that table. And there's a pie wedge, a major sector that my minor sector is in. A minor sector is this clump of stars. Okay? That's in that particular pie wedge. That clump of stars is moving in a curved path around this center. The center of the rotational center is the center of the Milky Way galaxy. The point of the pie wedge. Okay? We'll get to all the details here in a minute. Okay? But the rotational center of your minor sector is situated far away from the minor sector, not inside the minor sector, far away from the minor sector, in the enormous and dense star cloud of Sagittarius. Okay? What is the enormous and dense star cloud of Sagittarius? First of all, is Sagittarius a place?
Direction.
It's a direction. What direction is it? It's the direction that I'm looking where I'm pointing my finger here in the band of the Milky Way, towards the center of the Milky Way. The constellation of Sagittarius is right there. Okay? The center is right at my fingertip there. Yeah? Okay? That dense star cloud. Okay, so let's take a galaxy that's out in the first outer space level, to use as an example to understand this. The Sagittarius subgalactic system. What is that you're talking about? There's some sort of a collection, obviously, of stars smaller than the galaxy. It's subgalactic, and it's in the direction of Sagittarius. It's in the direction of the center of the Milky Way. Okay, here's a galaxy out in the first outer space level that you're seeing edge on. The Needle Galaxy. Obviously, if you don't blow it up, it's going to be this thin little thing because you're looking at it just pretty much smack edge on. It's this big spiral galaxy that you're looking edge on there. Okay, and here it is blown up. Okay, a little bit closer view. Okay, so you're looking at it smack edge on. You can see the big band of dust that's blocking a lot of your view, you know, that's right in the plane of the disk. Okay, and what do you see right in the middle of that? You see this big bulge in the center. It's called the central bulge. Okay, our galaxy is not unlike that galaxy out there in the first outer space level. There's this central, not so disk-like, a little bit more spherical, you know, spheroidal.
Just because there's a cluster of suns there that's real thick, right?
Right. That central bulge region, that's, okay, you know, in our galaxy, you can almost see it here, even with all of the clouds and stuff, there's kind of a You can see there's a bulge there at the center. Okay, our galaxy's like that. Okay, and I just use this because it's a lot easier to see. You know, if you look towards Sagittarius, and you look in the Sagittarius direction of the sky, so you're looking towards the central bulge, there's this collection of stars that are sort of a subgalactic system. They have a little bit different dynamics than all the other stars that are in the disk. Okay? That's the Sagittarius subgalactic system, the central bulge of stars in our galaxy.
Planets going around some of the suns that are in that thick part there?
Yeah.
Seems like it would never be nighttime.
well, obviously, if you get into really dense regions towards the center, it's not as dark a sky, right, as it is out here. So the rotational center of your minor sector is situated far away in the enormous and dense star cloud of the central bulge, it's in the direction of Sagittarius, around which your local universe and its associated creations, in other words, all the ones that are in the local, or in the, besides our local universe that are in the minor sector, okay, our local universe and the other local universes, that's the associated creations, that whole minor sector moves around that central bulge, and you got that central bulge, and coming out, from opposite sides of the vast central bulge, you may observe two great streams of star clouds emerging in stupendous stellar coils. Okay, the Milky Way galaxy, is going around center of all things. Okay, in a counterclockwise fashion. If you look at it in that point of view, like it from the southern hemisphere, the Milky Way is rotating this way too. Now, if you use the right-hand rule. Okay, if I make my fingers curl in the counterclockwise direction, the galaxy's in the same way. Okay, the circular galaxy is rotating this way. And so if you come off the central bulge, you'll have these coils coming off like that. Okay,
spiral arms.
The spiral arms. Okay.
Well, I was going to ask you about that because do the pie shaped wedges just cut straight across the spiral arms?
Yeah,
because I've always thought the spiral arms might be
right. So the spiral arms, is a phenomenon that's superimposed upon, and we'll kind of get into that as we get down here.
Because of the motion of the whole.
Right, that's a very complicated this whole structure, but they're just like that galaxy, the Triangulum galaxy that I passed around. You can see the coils, coming off the center. Okay, that one doesn't have much as big a central bulge in it, but you can see the coils, and you noticed. I told you to look closely at that because as you go along the one of those spiral arms, you see it clumpy, right? Two great star streams of star clouds. See, as you go along an arm, it's clumpy, okay? All right, so in other words, even though our galaxy is super hyper-managed by lots and lots of power beings, and the Andromeda and Triangulum galaxies aren't being managed like that, the Milky Way galaxy does have features like those galaxies we see out in the outer space levels. It does have a central bulge. It has, spiral coils. So it's not totally unlike, but unlike, looking at the Andromeda galaxy here, where I don't see 10 pi wedges. That looks like a smooth disk to me, right? Now, all the galaxies out in the outer space levels aren't being managed. If you go up above our disk, you'll see 10 pi wedges, okay? You won't see a smooth disk. It's being managed, okay? Micromanaged.
All 7 of them are like that, right?
All 7 are like that, yeah. Okay?
What force did they use to create these divisions?
The power beings are pretty grand beings. Try to get you... A disk of 10 trillion stars is being structured, molded like that. Okay, these are vast beings. Okay, and there's lots of them too.
So the first super universe looked at from the top would be very well organized.
Well, we don't really know. I mean, you can argue it both ways. My guess is probably they're all not that dissimilar. Because you can't get the grand universe settled in light and life without all seven coming together, you know. So I don't think you can necessarily conclude that things are way ahead of schedule in terms of the structure of the galaxy in one compared to seven. Yeah, Grand Fanta came from one, okay? But that doesn't mean that necessarily that the physical stuff is that far evolved beyond us. You know, it may not even be the case that there's a huge difference in the ascenders in all seven. After all, the primary ascender scheme super universe is ours, not the other six. You know, their primary schemes are the other six schemes. The ascension scheme is only dominant in the seventh super universe. Yeah, I mean, there's seven schemes and seven super universes. You know, you have ascenders in all seven, but in the seventh, the ascension scheme is the dominant scheme. You know, those other six schemes that we don't know anything about are dominant in one of the other six. Okay? Okay? So, you know, it may be just the way super universe number one is, you had a tendency to get the first jackrabbit to Havona from that super universe. But you know, maybe by now many more have come from seven than one. Matter of fact, you probably suspect that since we're primarily ascender one. You see, so you know, it's hard to know exactly how to think about some of those sort of differentials because you just aren't.
Tell us what the other six schemes are.
Nope. They just allude to it a few times. No, there's really not much of anything. Yeah. You know, remember, because that's, they're only given a mandate to reveal the ascension scheme, not the other six. So, yeah, the revelatory mandate kind of limits it.
Yeah. I have a question about the seven super universes, whether they came into existence all at once.
Yes.
They did.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you have seven master spirits, they all came into existence at the same time.
Okay, so ours is the same age as. Universe number one.
Right. You know, I mean, in terms of when each was begun, they were all begun at the same time. The question you don't know is, what's the differential in the physical evolution, personality evolution, whatnot? You know, I mean, who knows?
Theoretically, there could be a Urantia book for each super universe.
Right? Theoretically, yeah. Who knows how many more, quote-unquote, Urantia books there are in this super universe? Yep,
so yep. Michael is 611 something thousand. Mm-hmm. Michael's son.
Right.
So the next Michael son ahead of him numerically could have been chosen, could have chosen a spot in Super Universe 1
yep.
through 7.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You don't know. Yeah.
Because I thought they were numerically in a, saying, you know, that all his. Close associated brothers were in the seven.
You could assume that, but it's not likely that for the reason that we were kind of talking about, wasn't this last session, I think? It was. You know, you have two different ways that the super universe level is engaged. On the one hand, it's a universe of local universes. And so there really aren't seven super universes. There's just 700,000 local universes that those guys are picking from. See? Because they're local, you know, so very much their engagement is as a universe of local universes. Other phenomena don't engage it as a universe of local universes. They engage it as a universe of super universes. And it's different.
So our Michael and Mebadon, the universe mm-hmm. mother spirit, chose not only a location, but an ascension scheme.
Yeah.
That was one of the first choices
yeah.
they made.
Yeah.
Which one of these ascension schemes do we want?
Or not ascension schemes, but schemes. Yeah, that's the whole thing. You know, you don't even know what those other, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So that was one of their primary choices.
Yeah.
Now, within that, we're going to do this.
Right.
We've got to go to the seventh to do it.
Right. And for instance, one of the things, you know, once he's picked here, he's making his local universe have a lot of worlds where you have adjuster fusers. You know, You go to a neighboring local universe, and that, Michael, is predominantly doing spirit-fused worlds, you know, or, you know, this sort of thing. You know, so there's all these differences. Mm-hmm. Okay, not to mention you could have one of the other six schemes being a big focus somewhere in our super universe. Yeah, too. So, yeah. All right, so let's get to the next thing here.
The nucleus of the physical system to which your sun and its associated planets belong is the center of the one-time Andromeda Nebula. This former spiral nebula was slightly distorted by the gravity disruptions associated with the events which were attendant upon the birth of your solar system, and which were occasioned by the near approach of a large neighboring nebula. This near collision changed Andromeda into a somewhat globular aggregation, but did not wholly destroy the two-way precession of the suns and their associated physical groups. Your solar system now occupies a fairly central position in one of the arms of this distorted spiral, situated about halfway from the center out towards the edge of the star stream.
Okay, so like we were saying, you know, outside of the disk of the Milky Way, a trillion years ago, the force organizers spun up a tiny little whirl, tiny compared to the gigantic Milky Way. This tiny little whirl they started up called the Andromeda Nebula. And it's appropriately called, even in modern parlance, a nebula because it starts out to be just gas. You know, it's just nothing but gas. And slowly over time, stars, you know, begin to form. You know, and you can read that whole story when they talk about that at the beginning of part three. Okay, so that's what they're alluding to. You had this little spiral galaxy that eventually produced our sun. Okay. As well as about a million other stars. Okay, that little spiral galaxy produced just a little over a million stars. Okay, and you know that Andromeda Nebula became part of Nebadon, because we're in Nebadon. Okay, so the question is, well, how much of Nebadon is made up of the stars that came from that little tiny spiral galaxy? And just like they were saying, you know, remember when I showed you the Large Magellanic Cloud? That used to be a nice little spiral. Now it's this distorted blob. You know, like they said here, how did they say that? Somewhat globular aggregation. See, that's a somewhat globular aggregation now of the Large Magellanic Cloud rather than a nice little spiral. The same thing happened to our little Andromeda. It got distorted like that. And notice what they mentioned. One of the big things was you start assembling Nebadon, and there's a large collection of stars, you know, that was being brought in together with the Andromeda stars, and that distorted the Andromeda Nebula a lot. So again, let's go back to how much of Nebadon is stars from Andromeda? Well, how many... roughly how many inhabited worlds are you going to have in all of Nebadon when all is said and done? Does anyone remember? 10 million. Okay. It's like, well, how many stars is it going to take to have roughly 10 million inhabited worlds? It's like, well, do we have any sense of this? Well, they tell you that Satania, our local system, has about 2,000 stars in it. And when all is said and done, you're going to have about 1,000 inhabited worlds in Satania. So you got about twice as many stars as inhabited worlds. Let's see, they also tell you, like I've said several times, that the entire Milky Way galaxy has 10 trillion stars. And when all is said and done, you're going to have about 1 trillion inhabited worlds. Well, that's an even bigger ratio. That's 10 to 1 as opposed to 2 to 1. But it definitely, you know, from those two examples, you know, apparently it's going to take, you know, you're going to have a lot more stars than inhabited worlds. So, I mean, if you have 10 million inhabited worlds in Nebadon, I mean, you know, it's going to be about 20 million stars, maybe 100 million stars, you know. I mean, it depends. It's going to take quite a few stars. Let's just take the, you know, the most conservative estimate. Let's say it's 20 million stars. Well, there's only a million that came from Andromeda Nebula. I mean, it's going to take a lot more stuff to make Nebadon than just the Andromeda Nebula. You know, it's maybe 1/20th, see, of all of Nebadon. So the Andromeda Nebula is not a very big part of all of Nebadon. It's a very small fraction with just a million stars. So that gives you a little sense. Can't say anything too definite, but it's obviously, I mean, even if you're a super, you know, it's probably no more than a tenth of all of Nebadon, you know, depending on, you know, how things are set up. But it's definitely a small fraction of all of Nebadon, the Andromeda Nebula. But anyway, even once all that stuff gets collected, you know, Andromeda stars plus, all, you know, a huge amount of other stuff, maybe globular clusters and who knows what all, got all assembled to make up Nebadon, okay? It didn't get totally diffused into the mix. You still basically, within the region of Nebadon, you've got the remnants of that little spiral galaxy. You know, the arms are kind of still there. They aren't totally washed away, and that's what they're referring to, okay? So that little part of Nebadon that is the million stars of came from Andromeda, you know, the center of rotation of that, we're kind of about halfway out in the current distribution of, well, those million stars.
And we're talking about Nebadon. Is that what we're in, the Orion arm of the Milky Way, or that little star?
Again, all that arm stuff is, don't, you know, take all of that with a huge grain of salt. Okay, that's
named it because we don't really know, but so we're somewhat, we're
right. All those arm things, you know, I mean, we'll get really, that's what we're about to read about, just how many grains of salt you need when you think about those sorts of things.
But there are 100,000 local universes in the Milky Way.
Right, just to give you an idea of how big the Milky Way is, right? You know, this space that seems so big, the Andromeda Nebula, is small, really, even compared to a local universe. You know, let alone the whole super universe. So, okay, yep.
What does the sentence mean? But did not wholly destroy the two-way procession of the suns,
yeah,
and their associated physical group.
Right, so they're saying basically that little Andromeda Nebula had two coils, you know, a little spiral galaxy, two streams, okay, and those didn't totally get washed away. If you got way above Nebadon and looked down on it, you could, oh yeah, you can kind of still kind of see those coils. They're going to be distorted in some, but you can, they're telling you, you can still kind of see those two little coils of stars, okay?
This description right here of where our solar system occupied in the Andromeda Nebula, what's left of it, sounds like something I saw in a textbook, astronomy textbook, I think from the 1970s, and it showed it right, like as they describe it, in the middle of one of the arms, but they were depicting it from the Milky Way.
Right. Right, right.
That's how they were confusing.
Right, right. If you go in and look at, you know, where they say the sun is in the Milky Way galaxy, so there's an awful lot of misunderstanding about the Milky Way galaxy still. I mean,
still,
they think that you know, basically the Milky Way is about 100,000 light years in diameter. Okay, so in other words, the radius is about 50,000, and they think the sun is about, say, 27 or 5 or something like that, about, you know, maybe roughly halfway out from this, you know, but no, it's what, you know, really it's 200,000 light years, our local system out from Uversa, out from the center. You know, the galaxy is actually 500,000 light years in diameter, not 100,000. It's actually 500,000, and we're not about halfway out. You know, we're about 200,000, and it's about 250,000 out. You know.
Right.
Okay, so they just gave you that little bit to remind yourself that you not only have the very definitive fact of here's our sun and you've got planets going around it, but our star, you know, is was part of this little system that still has a rotation to it. You know, those millions of stars still basically are kind of going around, okay, a center of mass, the center of the little Andromeda Nebula. So you bring those two sort of fairly straightforward astronomic pictures of our solar system and that little spiral galaxy that's part of Nevadon into the bigger context, and you try to understand just what Jim was alluding to there. How does that fit into the whole big picture? So let's do that.
The Sagittarius sector and all other sectors and divisions of Orbiton are in rotation around Uversa. And some of the confusion of Urantian star observers arises out of the illusions and relative distortions produced by the following multiple revolutionary movements.
Okay, so start off. Remember how we pointed out, really, you know, to use this word sector in major sector, that's really kind of the direct, literal sort of use of the word as a pi wedge. But we also use the word sector in more general terms, which is kind of what minor sector is. Or just like here, you know, you just use it in general terms. You know, there's that central bulge region, that Sagittarius sector. Now, it isn't literally a minor sector or a major sector. That's just, they're just using the word sector in a general sense. You know, all their sectors and divisions. See, they're trying to, you know, even say it like that, sectors and divisions. Just, you know, all the different star clouds, groupings, whatnot, you know, the coils. You know, there's all this structure. How does all of that fit together into the hierarchy that we know about, where you have a super universe and then you have major sectors and minor sectors and local universes, you know, constellations, local systems, etc.? Yeah?
Chris, I know it's all elongated or squealish and stuff, but wouldn't a cheese wedge be a better description than a pie wedge?
Sure, right? Sure, yeah.
Smash, sure, cheese ball.
Yeah, right, yeah.
No, think of it as a giant pizza.
Or a pizza, cutting a pizza, right. I mean, but you're right. I mean, it's a disc, like a cheese wheel is a disc. Yeah. You know, a pie obviously isn't so disc-like. Yeah, exactly. Oh. You know, the thing that's problematic about thinking, you know, most of the time when you think of a cheese wheel, it's pretty thick relative to its diameter. You know, you want it to be a picture in your mind that's thinner than that. You know, see, you know, obviously, you know, look at the thickness of that compared to its diameter. So now everyone focus, because this is the technical part. If you aren't focused, okay, you're not going to follow this. Follow it very closely as we step through these seven facts. Okay, think about it very precisely. See if you can get your three-dimensional visualization so that you can see this and not be confused. Because not only, like they're saying, is the Milky Way galaxy not like those galaxies that we look at out in the outer space levels, where it's just this nice big kind of grand disk that we can tell is going around like this. Okay, it's got all of this internal structure because it's a collection. It wasn't just made as a single object. It was all this little stuff has been collected together, okay? And then it's hyper-managed, so there's all this internal structure, okay? And none of this internal motion is known by current astronomers, okay? And so the fact that the astronomers just think that you've got the Earth going around the sun and the sun going around the center of the Milky Way, that's all they think is happening. But it's not. It's much more complicated than that. And so there's all kinds of errors because of that ignorance, okay? Now, not only does it cause all kinds of problems for astronomers, but this complexity causes all kinds of problems for Urantia book readers. So you have to take it very carefully, one step at a time. Okay, so read those first two.
One, the revolution of Urantia around its sun. Two, the circuit of your solar system about the nucleus of the former Andromeda Nebula.
Okay, so is everyone clear? You know, those are the two we've talked about. Okay, you've got the obvious thing about the solar system, and then just remember that the sun is one of these million stars that were all going around in a circle in that little spiral galaxy, and that million stars still are. So that's a a motion that's bigger than the solar system but smaller than the Milky Way that current scientists don't know anything about. Yeah?
So the size of that Andromeda Nebula are tiny.
Tiny compared to.
It's a tiny little galaxy compared to
the Milky Way. Right. But it's big compared to the solar system.
Right.
Right. Very big compared to the solar system, but super tiny compared to the Milky Way. Okay. But anyway, so it's just like this little eddy, you know, that we're in the midst of the great big disk of the Milky Way. Okay. Okay, so there's those two. Then next.
Three, the rotation of the Andromeda stellar family and the associated clusters about the composite rotation gravity center of the star cloud of Nebadon.
Okay, so you have all of Nebadon, like we were just saying, and the million Andromeda stars are just part of all of Nebadon. And Nebadon is a closed system. The power beings, the master physical controllers and the power centers, are holding all of the stars that compose Nebadon together in a collection. They can't drift off. They stay within the presence of the creative Mother Spirit. Okay? So it's a closed system. In that sense. I mean, the stars aren't just going off. You know, they come back upon themselves in some way. It's a closed motion of stars. There's a center of gravity. All these stars that make up Nebadon, there's a center of gravity of all that. So there's a motion. The million Andromeda ones are moving about within Nebadon in some way, and all the others. Everything is moving about in a star cloud, you know, collection of stars. There's some sort of internal motion. They don't describe the details. We don't know what it is. But in some way, it's a closed system where all the million stars of Andromeda and all the other ones, millions and millions more, come close back on themselves in their paths as they move about through Nebadon. Okay? Kind of in this, you know, I mean, a similar thing that I, you know, showed you a picture of, if I can find it. Where did it go? You know, is this globular cluster. I mean, all those stars in that globular cluster are obviously staying close to each other in space. You know, they're not frozen on some grid. They aren't hung like Christmas ornaments on some spherical tree, okay? I mean, they're moving, but they're not drifting off because there's a center of gravity of all that. So they're moving about the center of gravity of all that, okay, in a closed space. Okay, so that's the next level up that current astronomers don't know anything about, that not only are we in this little eddy, but that eddy is moving about in a star cloud that's our local universe.
And everything is rotating, but we may not understand how.
Right. Well, here, see, you know why things are moving here. It's, it's a composite rotation gravity center. The same reason that the Earth goes around the sun, all the stars in Nebadon go about a center of gravity. So they're just telling you it's what you understand. Things are kept from drifting off because gravity's keeping them localized. Okay. Exactly what the paths are of all these things, who knows? It's obviously not a disk. You know, all the stars in Nebadon aren't in a disk and they aren't just going around or something like that. You know, it's some sort of a spherical-like or whatever distribution with some complicated,
compounded,
you know, motions. Yeah.
What is the center of gravity?
Well, so you don't have to actually have an object. Okay. There is no great big object necessarily at the center of that everything's, orbiting about. You know, it's just if you have a collection like that, if I'm one of the stars on the outside, I see all the stars that are inward from me as if they were all at a point in the center and I'm orbiting about that. The crust of the Earth, sees everything inside of the crust as if it was a point at the center. That the center of gravity, is the center of mass of the whole earth, that's the center of the earth. And every point on the earth is going around the center of the earth, forgetting about things being stuck together by chemical bonding and whatnot. But just imagine it was just that things weren't stuck together. It was just a big collection of gas molecules. Okay, any gas molecule would see all the gas molecules inside of that radius it's at, as if they were all at the center, and it was just going around that center of mass. And there's a whole bunch of questions there. Okay.
Is that who creates that point in the center? It's almost like relating it to what you talked about, the Isle of Paradise. It's almost like these power beings are able to...
Okay, they're not creating a point.
Influence of paradise.
No, no, not that. It's not like they're doing something fancy. I mean, if I'm a power being, and there's a whole bunch of stars out in front of me, and I just wrap my arms around them, and I keep the stars from going around because they have to bump into my arms, they can't get out. Okay, I now have a star cloud within my arms, and there's a center of mass to that whole collection of stars. Okay. They've collected them together. The center of mass comes automatically. It's not like they make a center of mass.
Because of the way gravity functions.
Right, it's just the way gravity functions. Yeah.
So then gravity.
That it's central.
He just does, the power being just does it to start.
The power beings are just keeping them from drifting away. They're keeping them confined. Now, obviously, they probably have all kinds of stuff that they're doing, with dark islands of space and whatnot to try to control the dynamics of all this, but all those details we don't know about. But the whole point is just that there is motion within the local universe about its center of gravity.
One motion missing from this list is the rotation of the Earth around its own axis.
That's the first one.
No, that's around the sun. Right, right. I mean,
here's my question.
Yeah.
Do all spherical bodies rotate, or some of them still?
Yeah.
Axial rotation.
No, they're, I mean, like even the architectural spheres, rotate on an axis. They have a day. Right? It's a stabilizing thing.
Because I know the moon rotates. It's just not apparent to us because of the way it's caught.
Right, because it's tightly locked. Yeah, everything rotates. Especially if you bring stuff together, it just it's gonna. In a close, and the tighter it comes, the faster it spins like a skater, All right. Okay. All right. So in other words, there's motion about the old center of the Andromeda Nebula. There's motion within Nebadon. Nebadon is not a fixed grid of stars. There's internal motion. Okay. Internal motion within Nebadon. Okay. Next step.
4. The swing of the local star cloud of Nebadon and its associated creations around the Sagittarius center of their minor sector.
Okay, so now we've already talked about it. And notice the word, swing. They very purposely, in 3, 4, and 5, they could have said rotation, rotation, rotation. Because after all, up there at top, they said the rotational center of your minor sector. They very purposely said swing here so that you didn't get confused. They're trying to help you as much as possible. Unlike when we're talking about the internal motion within Nebadon, the center of all that motion is within Nebadon. Okay, but now we're talking about, we've got Nebadon and the other 99 local universes that are in the minor sector. Okay, that bigger cloud, okay, they're telling you can think of that like a planet being in orbit about the center of the Milky Way, okay, just like the Earth is in, is swinging around the sun, okay, so now that, is basically the motion that current scientists think is going on. They think that there's the movement of the Earth around the sun, and then the sun goes around the center of the Milky Way in this sort of simple gravitational sense, that the sun is in orbit about the center of gravity of the Milky Way galaxy, about the center the Milky Way galaxy. Okay? And yes, there is that motion. Okay? Okay? But there's all these other motions too. Yeah, within it and above it too. We haven't gotten to the end of the list yet. Yeah?
Chris, so when I think of a swing, I'm thinking of a swing. We go on a swing, it goes back and forth.
Right,
so.
But here we're going around and around and around.
Instead of going in circles this way, it goes halfway this way, and then it comes back that way, and then it comes back that way.
That kind of a swing.
No,
we're just talking about it. We're just talking. Remember, we talked about this last time. The word swing means curved path. It doesn't mean pendulum. It means curved path. Okay, we call the playground thing a swing because the seat you sit on moves on a curved path when it moves. Okay, that particular one stops and comes back, but that's not essential to the word swing. Okay. So again, the Sagittarius center in the direction of Sagittarius is the center of the Milky Way galaxy, the central bulge. Everything's going around the center. But you've got the next thing.
Five, the rotation of the 100 minor sectors, including Sagittarius, about their major sector.
Okay. Now, minor sectors are within a given major sector. They don't go drifting out of the pi wedge they're in. Okay? Things are being controlled. The stuff that's in the pi wedge stays in the pi wedge. Okay? So, for instance, it doesn't actually work like we think. You know, even if you bring in the minor sector notion rather than just the sun going around the center, that minor sector doesn't just go chugging around, going from one major sector to another or whatever. Okay, I mean, it has that beginnings of that gravitational orbit, the minor sector about the center of the galaxy, but only to a point. It's going to come back. Because all the minor sectors stay within the major sector. So, see, there's motion within the major sector is what they're saying there. And remember the major sector, all the major sectors go all the way into the center. Part of the central bulge is in our major sector, and you know the other parts are in the other nine major sectors. Okay, that central bulge isn't a totally smooth thing. It's part of the pi wedges, too. Which, of course, you know, current scientists have no imagination of. So that, see, including all the way to what the center in the direction of Sagittarius. See, you know, if you think it's a region, see, you're going to think, you know, that the whole central bulge is part of our, you know, or something. I say, no, okay. Just our major sector, our pi wedge, and everything in there. Now, is free to move around to some degree. Now, probably the stuff in the center is not free to drift all the way out the outer edge, okay? But it's not like even in the central bulge there that those things are fixed. There's some movement. There's some internal motion, okay? Okay? And then, you know, a question that you have that they don't tell you because probably it's against the revelatory mandate. It's like, well, okay, my minor sector, how much does it move around in the pi wedge? Is it free to move radially a lot or what? You don't know. Okay?
The thing that always confused me was I assumed that the minor sector had its own rotational, you know, like you were talking about earlier, where a power being wraps his arms around mm-hmm. that and it finds a center of gravity, but it's that's not how you're describing it. It's right. Just kind of drifting. Star drifts.
Well, we're not to there yet. Yeah. Not to that yet. The star drift is separate. Don't bring that in yet. But we'll see when we get to the very end of the section. The minor sector, remember, is not being held like the local universe is, because it's a universe. Okay, yeah. It's one turning. Okay, that's the thing that's very being definitively held. It's the universe of local universes. But there is a grouping of those local universes that is sort of less hyper-managed. The distribution of the local universes within the, you know, the minor sector can swell and shrink and, you know, whatnot, okay? You know, as you'll see when we get to the end, okay? The only thing that you want to think of is really kind of having tightly hands around it or arms around it is the local universe, okay? The other stuff is a little more gently, as it were, kind of controlled, you know, regulated. Okay, so but the whole point of the, you know, the, again, it's they're saying rotation. It's a gravitational thing. Things are attracting, you know, and moving gravitationally. So there's internal motion within the major sector. It's probably controlled quite a bit. Stuff isn't probably free to just go all over the place, but they're just telling you it's not like things are the minor sectors are fixed in the pi wedge and motionless within the pi wedge. Okay, they are moving about some within the pi wedge.
So these controls, they're using anti-gravity?
They're using, yeah, all the things at their power to, yeah, regulate this. Okay, now the next thing.
Six, the whirl of the 10 major sectors, the so-called star drifts, about the Uversa headquarters of Orvinton.
Okay. Now, whirl. Okay, remember, that's the word that's referring to the whirl and the force charge. Okay, so they're reminding you that the primary force organizers have created a big whirl in the force charge. That there's this, largest organized motion within to the whole of the Milky Way stellar system. It's all in a whirl, okay? And a whirl is not like, like, say, a hurricane, okay? A whirl is a single fact. It's not a distributed motion about a center like a hurricane is. A whirl is a single object, as it were, for a force organizer. So there's no distribution. A whirl is like a record platter turning. Okay? The 10 pi wedges, see, are fixed in that whirl. Okay? When all is said and done, everything is being very much over-controlled by the force organizers, you know, go beyond the power beings, by the force organizers establishing this whirl and maintaining this whirl in a certain way that everything is caught up in. And you can, even in the outer space levels, there's a big whirl the size of that Andromeda galaxy, say, okay? And you can make some spiral structures that will have some differential rotation and get twisted into a spiral, okay? But there's a point where they kind of get there, you know, the whirl dominates, and so it's almost like you paint a spiral pattern on the whirl, and then the spiral pattern just turns around, or the bar just turns around and stays a bar, stays a spiral. The spiral doesn't wind up tighter and tighter and tighter because it's not just gravitational motion about a center of gravity. There's a whirl that dominates the whole system. Okay?
A whirl indicates that record platter type motion to where the outer is in sync with the inner.
Right.
They don't get, you know,
right. There isn't differential rotation.
Arms and all that.
Okay, now the star drift thing, what that's about is, back before we knew anything about, that we were in this disc-shaped galaxy called the Milky Way Galaxy, back when we just kind of thought it was just, there was a bunch of stars all around us and we were in the midst of it, you know, we at least recognized that they weren't just fixed like we used to think when we had the celestial sphere thing and we thought of the stars as being the fixed stars, quote unquote, you know, little white paint blobs on a on a dome, okay? You know, we knew there was this three-dimensional distribution, and we knew that the things had to be in motion in some way. And we said, well, they must be just kind of moving this way and, you know, every which direction. You know, and so if you look towards Ursa Major and you see this dipper-shaped pattern of stars, you know, it's like, well, okay, yeah, but those stars are moving in every which direction. And so over time, it's just, you know, they're going to go off in all sorts of different ways. When they started looking at some of these things more closely, they said, you know, I don't think they're just going in random directions. It looks like a lot of those stars in that pattern are drifting all the same direction together, as if they were like a system, but you knew they weren't. You knew they weren't, you know, some of them were like this and some were like this, but they still seemed to be going like this, rather than, or whatever. They all seemed to be drifting together. And of course, eventually we realized, well, of course, because, if the cup in my left hand here is where I am, and the cup in my right hand is farther out in the disk of the Milky Way, and, these things are going around the center like planets around the sun, they don't go like a record platter, okay? They're both going in the same direction, but this one's going faster, and starts to... And so if I'm standing here on this cup in my left hand, this cup will start to drift off to the right as we're going around, okay? Of course, that's why it's because things are going around the disk of the Milky Way. Okay. Now, like we were saying, well, it isn't quite as simple as that. There's all this other motion, like the motion within the major sector, and things aren't just allowed to drift. Two objects in a major sector aren't allowed to drift apart until they're in different major sectors. Okay. But that star drift idea still works. You can say those so-called star drifts about the Uversa headquarters of Orvinton. If I imagine myself standing on Uversa at the center of the Milky Way galaxy and I look out into a Pi wedge, I look out into a major sector, I see all kinds of internal motion within that major sector. There's small little things like the Andronovers motion and all. There's all this internal motion, big and small, in that Pi wedge, okay? But I also notice that the Pi wedge drifts. Okay, in order to keep looking in the Pi wedge, I have to turn as I'm standing on Uversa, because the Pi wedge drifts around, because the whirl goes around, right? The record platter goes around. Things are allowed to do their gravitational thing, but to a point, only to a point. So to manage this, you're managing a very dynamic system. Things are moving all over the place. Yeah.
Does this relate to the torus at all?
The what now?
Torus.
Okay. Remember the donut, the torus.
Right, but the whorl. Like that would be level.
You've got this segment of the torus, the segment of the donut, and in the center of that segment is this whorl, where the Milky Way galaxy is.
Does it go up and down? No.
No. Okay. No. Okay. So, ultimately what rules the whole thing is that whirl. When all is said and done, all these internal motions are not allowed to, run their gravitational course. They're controlled to a point. And when all is said and done, the force organizers rule the night, okay? They're in charge of the whirl. The power beings have nothing to do with primordial force and whirls and that sort of stuff, okay? All right.
7, the movement of Orvinton, and 6, associated super universes around Paradise and Havona. The counterclockwise precessional of the super universe space level.
Okay, so we understand that one. That's what we've talked about a lot. So they're all going around the central universe.
Scientists know nothing about this.
Right. Well, so like I told you, basically scientists are thinking 1... and 4. Okay.
Are the super universes moving through space, or is space the space they're in moving?
The super universe, the way to think about it is the super universes are going with the flow of the force charge in the super universe base level. That's number seven. There, remember when we were talking about this, the motions in the levels, and we called them flows to kind of visualize them. There's a flow around the center of all things. Okay, and everything in the super universe space level is going with that flow. It just goes around. The force charge flows around, as it were. There's a motion. Everything in there has a directed motion around, and that's controlled by Nether Paradise.
Is Gene asking, is that containerized space?
Space oscillates. Okay. Okay. But, you know, that's what space is doing. It's oscillating. It's the force charge that's, you know, and everything is in the force charge. It comes from the force charge. Ultimatons are, you know, condensations of the force charge. So, you know, that primordial force is, you know, has this ordered motion.
Okay. But do you consider moving,
that answer,
even though space is respirating? Are we actually moving through space with the force charge? Space being the container system.
Right, yeah. I mean, the force charge, in that sense, is moving through space. Yeah. Okay. You know, and the respiration, the force charge kind of is synchronized with, it moves with the space. Yeah, in the respiration mode. Okay.
These multiple motions are of several orders. The space paths of your planet and your solar system are genetic, inherent in origin. The absolute counterclockwise motion of Orvinton is also genetic, inherent in the architectural plans of the Master Universe. But the intervening motions are of composite origin, being derived in part from the constitutive segmentation of matter energy into the super universes, and in part produced by the intelligent and purposeful action of the Paradise Force organizers.
Okay, so in other words, 1, 2, and 7, those three motions, are pretty much just doing what they do naturally. And that's not, they aren't, you know, you don't have power beings, you know, moving the Earth around the sun. The Earth goes around the sun because just that's what gravity does. Okay, they don't have to manage that. Okay, they don't have to manage the fact that things are going around, you know, the old center of the Andromeda Nebula. That's just, you know, a gravity motion. Okay, and they aren't, you know, managing the movement of the Milky Way, a galaxy around the center of all things. That's just what it does genetically, like you're saying. That's just its nature. Okay, I mean, yes, the master physical controllers. The master architects and the force organizers are involved in those big picture things, but it's a, you know, it's a plan, it's laid out, and it's just doing its thing. Okay. But everything in between, you know, 3 through 6, yeah, there's some things where gravity's just doing what gravity does, but there's also a whole bunch of management going on, you know. It's, you know, personality managed. The universe is mind made and personality managed. There's a whole, in that whole interdomain, there's all kinds of management, including all the way up to the management of the world. For instance, for our galaxy, you can't let that world just totally condense into ultimatons and have there be no world anymore. Because then how would you keep the major sectors? See, so you can't, the associate transcendental master force organizers are not totally condensing that whirl into ultimatons. The whirl is staying. Out in the outer space levels, you obviously have a lot of those. The whirl, the puissant energy, is condensing into gravity energy, into automatons. Okay. And slowly, there's less and less of a record platter whirl going on. And more, it's just things that are kind of going into gravitational orbits. Okay. But obviously here, you have to maintain a whirl very definitively. Because when all is said and done, the thing has to rotate like a record platter.
So you're saying in the first outer space region, it won't be like
that. First and second are not so much like that. And you can see galaxies in all phases of condensation, from ones that, look like they're mostly just a record platter, with fancy marker dots on it, rotating, to things that are very much, in a very differential rotation, like all the planets in the solar system, Yeah. Yep.
At this point, a dark gravity body came by, they would shuttle it off.
Yeah, right.
They had the power to do that.
All right, they're going to control those sorts of things, yeah. And that's kind of what we mentioned, remember, at the end of the last section, that curious statement about temporarily passing out of material existence. Remember, we talked about that. I mean, when things aren't settled, inhabited yet, the big picture disrupts that. Well, the big picture disrupts it, but once it's inhabited, it's very hyper controlled. The power beings, are always, but they remind you. See, the Paradise Force organizers, are very much active here in the super universe space level.
And they're continuously active.
They're continuously active. See, they aren't just starting up a whirl and going away. They have to maintain the big picture of the super universe. Force organizers, remember when they tell you about making an Andromeda nebula? Those force organizers that go out to spin up that tiny little whirl, they don't come from Paradise. They come from Eversa. Okay? We have force organizers, Paradise force organizers here, maintaining the central universe. I mean, the seventh super universe. Not just in there in the central universe. And coming out. All right, then the last little bit.
The local universes are in closer proximity as they approach Havona. The circuits are greater in number, and there is increased superimposition, layer upon layer. But farther out from the eternal center, there are fewer and fewer systems, layers, circuits, and universes.
Okay, that little statement is reminding you that, if you imagine things going around the Milky Way, Milky Way isn't just out in the middle of nowhere, like those galaxies out in the outer space levels. On the inside boundary, it's the dark gravity bodies, Sirius mass, on the inside boundary of the super universe space level. So like I was alluding to earlier, if you imagine, say, like a minor sector, like they're kind of doing here, a bunch of local universes, it's in my hands here. As I watch that minor sector go around and get to the inside, there's going to be a tendency for, see, my hands are far apart on the outside, and as I go around, my hands come together, and the same local universes are still within my hands because things are being pulled together tidally by the dark gravity bodies, and then as it comes back out, it'll spread back out again. And in tight. See, so they're pointing out here, you may not have a lot of local universes stacked on top of each other in the disk. And in there, you'll start to get them all layered in stacks. Because of course you can't let them intermingle. So you've got to stack them. Okay. All that has to be controlled and stuff. All has to be managed, so that all this stuff stays where it's supposed to be. And despite the fact that there's all of this internal motion and flexing and whatnot going on as it goes around and around, okay? All right, so that's why that's in there. Just to remind you that the dark gravity bodies don't just do absolute gravity stuff. They also do linear gravity stuff, just like we understand, okay? And, when you get in there close, it's going to want to bunch things up. You get out, things will drift back up apart again.
Do you think the flaring out of space and getting deeper as you go out further has anything to do with nether paradise?
Yeah, remember there was there's an east-west differential to paradise that is regulating, this angle. Mm-hmm. It's working to keep things, towards the plane heading out. But obviously, it's flaring out, so there's a spreading of that influence. I mean, things are allowed to be farther and farther away from a central plane as you go farther and farther out. And see, that very fact that there's something that varies with distance like that, that's not, the aisle in and of itself can't, its influence can't vary with distance. That's the dark gravity bodies.
Isn't the overall shape of between the plane of creation and the existence of nether paradise, isn't that a little bit like a Celtic cross?
Well, right. I mean, there's the two cones of space, the unpervaded space. Right.
Maybe these reservoirs are taking up that sort of a shape, which enables this dimension to flare out in that way because the reservoirs are flaring out.
Yeah. See, what am I gonna say about the geometry of the master universe? I mean, like, I know anything about why things are, the revelators say not even they totally understand why things are shaped like they are. It has something to do with the big picture.
The Maltese crust that they talk about?
Yeah. That just because it has the flaring, Yeah. Okay, so if there's questions that remain, let's address them as we go forward, reading more. The next section, is meant to be sort of a corollary to this section. It brings up a little bit more of the details, but I guess maybe what I would suggest is do it what we just did tonight on your own. See if you can sit down and step through all the paragraphs and all the bullet points here, and it's like, okay, yeah, I understand what that is, just see if you can think through it clearly. And if you find there's a spot that you don't understand, then, let's talk about it. But try to get yourself so that this is definitively clear, so that we can build upon this structure and it's not fuzzy anymore. And it's certainly, don't let yourself go off on this tangent of, I think that the super universe of Orvintine includes the Virgo, cluster or something. Okay, no. Okay, it's the seventh galaxy, not the seventh cluster of galaxies. It's one galaxy, basically, the Milky Way galaxy. All right, let's take a moment here.